Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for people who are finally pregnant after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying with multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, last year I was finally pregnant, and now I'm finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. I'm delighted to say that this podcast is sponsored by Peanut. Peanut is the app that helps you meet like-minded women who are trying to conceive, pregnant, or already mums. Peanut provides a safe space for women to build friendships, ask questions, and find support. Introducing you to women nearby who are at a similar stage in their journey, Peanut provides access to a community of women who are there to listen, share information, and offer valuable advice. Whether it's understanding IVF, PCOS, miscarriage, or pregnancy and beyond, Peanut is a place to connect with women who understand. I used to go to a weekly rhyme time class with Ren, and between the babies crying, the toddlers singing, and all the general noise and shenanigans, it could be really hard to stop and chat to some of the other mums. So when one of them connected with me on Peanut, it was fab. We made a beeline for each other at the next class and even went for a coffee together afterwards. Because of the app, it meant there was a friendly face in the room, which I have to say was just really lovely. You can download the app for free today. Head to peanut.app.link/finallypregnant or search for Peanut in your app store. And when you do, make sure you head over to the Finally Pregnant group. Hello there. How are you doing? I hope that you're really well. First things first, if you listened to my last episode, you'll know that I had a COVID test. The great news is I didn't have COVID. I've got a bit of a sore throat, but you know, as long as it's not COVID, we can deal with it. I was so impressed with the speed that I got my results. It was within 24 hours. So I was only in isolation for that long. I thought I might stay there, you know, watch a movie, get a bit more work done. But as soon as the text message came in, I was straight down to Bob and Ren. I could not hold myself back. What else has been going on in the world? We're in lockdown. So truly, not a hell of a lot. But over at the Hangout, we have organised our Christmas get-together, which I'm very excited about. So it's a little shindig. It's happening early because I'm hoping that in December we will be out of lockdown so people will be able to see family and friends. But we're going to catch up on Saturday, the 28th of November. And it's going to be a lot of fun celebrating bumps and introducing little ones who have arrived this year. I can't wait. And I'm also planning to throw in a couple of baby shower games just because I think it will be fun, you know, because baby showers haven't been quite so much a thing. Also, if you're thinking about not wanting one because you don't want to jinx it, even though that's a whole different conversation about your rational mind. But anyway, I won't go into that right now. But we're going to do it because it's going to be a little bit of fun. So yeah, if you fancy joining us, you are so, so welcome. And it would be a great way if you join the Hangout to then get to know loads of the members in one fell swoop. So head over to katstrawbridge.com/the Hangout. And as always, all the links are in the show notes. Also in the Hangout, I'm really looking forward to December's speaker session, which is happening on Tuesday, the 1st of December. Shika, aka My Little Food Critic on Instagram, is going to be joining us as our special guest. And she knows everything there is to know about weaning babies onto food, whether that be purees or baby-led weaning. And she also has this amazing trick of upgrading recipes that were good for baby food to toddler food as well. So do check out her Instagram again in the show notes. It's not to be missed. And she's such an amazing woman as well. If those aren't reasons enough to join the Hangout, then I will also remind you that once you join, you get 15% off everything else that I do. For example, my Coping with an Anxious Pregnancy workshop in December, which I'm really looking forward to. And I really hope that those people who have already signed up and anyone that is planning to get so much from that, especially because of how hard it is to be pregnant after infertility. Well, how hard it can be, should I say, to be pregnant after infertility and loss, and then add to that a pandemic, and then potentially anxieties around heading into Christmas, all of that kind of stuff. We're going to cover it all. So yeah, you get 15% off that, or the Finally Pregnant yoga sessions, which have sold out every time we've done them this year. So much so that we're going to be doing them every month next year. So that's really, really exciting with the gorgeous Sim. Anyway, what else have I got for you ahead of today's chat? I know. On Friday, a bonus episode of the Finally Pregnant podcast is going out. Exciting! This episode is going to be especially useful if you're listening to this and you're trying to conceive and wondering what your options might be, or that you are already thinking that surrogacy might be in your future, or you might have already started down that road. It's going to be a Finally Pregnant Modern Family special with a special guest, Natalie Sutherland, who is a partner at the law firm Burgess Mee Family Law. And she is a specialist when it comes to surrogacy. And we cover all the basics, all the kind of need to know when you're heading into surrogacy in the UK. And we also talk about, you know, the impact of having a surrogate elsewhere in the world as well, and what you need to make sure that you cover if you are based in the UK. And there's a little bit of adoption chat at the end too. What I'm really hoping with this episode is that it will be a really good starting point, that I've kind of asked some of the questions that you might be wondering about. So make sure you are subscribed so that you get a notification of that episode as soon as it lands. Talking of subscribing, make sure you do it anyway. And also please rate and review on Apple Podcasts. And you can also do that over at my Facebook page, facebook.com/trying years. Over now to today's episode, which is a gorgeous chat with my gorgeous friend Emily, who earlier this year brought her daughter Hope into the world via surrogate in Canada. And Emily has been through, as she will tell you, a 10-year journey to have Hope, and COVID threw more than enough additional spanners in the work for her. It was just one thing after another. But Hope is here. I'm delighted to say I have met her and she is truly beautiful. And today, Emily and her surrogate Randall are going to be talking to me about their experiences. So I really, really hope that you enjoy this chat. That's it from me, other than to say take care and have a good week. Bye bye. Hi there, Emily and Randall. Thank you so, so much for joining me today. I really appreciate this transatlantic call. How are you both doing?
I'm very good. I'm very good. Yeah, we nearly got the time wrong, didn't we? Because we just, UK switched times yesterday and Canada didn't. So I was like, oh no.
I think this is better for you though, Randall, isn't it?
Yeah.
Fab. Okay, well, we've got so much to talk about today because we are going to be covering, Emily, your fertility journey, kind of, I hate it, but kind of briefly, just to set us up to where we are, talking about being finally pregnant and everything that that involved, because that's just an episode in itself, let's face it. And now on to you, finally parenting. So, Emily, if you can kick us off with just a bit of a history about what got you here today, or what got you so far as meeting Randall to talk about her being your surrogate.
Yeah, where do I start on that one? I mean, essentially 10 years ago, almost last month, I was diagnosed with bowel cancer. And that is the beginning of this whole thing. It meant that I had major surgeries, lots of chemo. I was not well for quite a long time, like a good sort of 2 years. I just got married to Dom and we had hoped to have children. I was actually pregnant when I was diagnosed. So that was another part of the story and the loss that we went through as well. And then I was, I'll say, lucky to get over the cancer. But I was left with a lot of issues, physical, emotional, spiritual, mental. Then 8 years ago, we decided I was going to have a rest and then eventually started to try for babies. It became really clear really quickly that I would need help. I didn't lose my fertility completely as a result of the cancer, but it turns out that it, to some extent, it might have been easier if I had done, because it led us down a route that just kept, to all intents and purposes, going wrong. We had four IVFs. Within that, I had another pregnancy that we lost. We just went through lots and lots of different stages of post-cancer life, infertility life. So I think probably then about 3 years ago, Dom, my husband, and I had just paused everything and not really made a decision that we were going to live without children, but we definitely weren't doing any treatment. And I was coming to terms with what that might mean. I went through a very specific moment, and it's really like I can detail it in minutiae detail, of deciding that we were going to go and try IVF one more time, given that it was way further than cancer. And I had started to have, I'd had various therapies and things about all the loss and stuff. And I was going to do a donor IVF cycle in Spain. And we were about to press go on it. And I had the biggest set of panic attacks that I've ever experienced in my life for about 2 weeks, just almost constant. And I really just was able to come to some clarity about the fact that this was really wrong. I didn't want to be doing this. I thought I did, and my body was just going no. And that came with a lot of guilt, but it also came with a lot of freedom, and a lot of stuff just left. I felt like I had this huge wave of my shoulders just dropped, and I felt better. And at that point, we didn't know we were going to have surrogacy. So at that point, I thought this means we probably will live child-free. But we had done some investigations into surrogacy because of bowel cancer. You know, you automatically, a lot of stuff is done to your pelvis and your this region where you it's just not easy to get pregnant. And through various conversations, Dom and I picked it back up again and said, what if we were able to get pregnant with a surrogate? What's stopping us? And my job, as you probably know, is a coach. And it was that I did it. I didn't use anyone else to do this. I just did it on myself and went, what if I knew that we could do this? What if there were solutions? And honestly, that is just where it started. We very quickly started to look into it. America was a no-go from lots of reasons, including expense, but just all sorts of other reasons. The UK system is difficult. It's not impossible, but it's difficult in the UK and it's not technically legal. And then this amazing situation occurred where the agency that we'd been speaking to in the UK said, we've just started working with Canada. Do you want to find out more? And I was like, yeah, why not? And that honestly was just, that was almost like press go. It was within the space of a few months of saying that we'd signed up with a Canadian agency, we'd talked about the dates and the potential of where we were going to go. And fast forward to then, what, four, probably not that long, 5, 6 months, certainly not a year, like 5, 6 months later, we got matched with Randall.
Listening to you talk about it, so we've known each other for a few years now, actually. We met, even though with the fertility is in common, it wasn't because of that we met originally. And you talking about some of those moments, like I remember you saying to me, I just know I'm putting it down. I've had it. And I was just really impressed, doesn't feel like the right word, but just, you know, like with your clarity about that decision, and you just couldn't put yourself through anymore. And I really, like I say, impressed isn't the right word, but I really respected that, I guess, because so often when we're in the depths of a fertility journey and we just keep going, keep going, keep going, and it's so hard, and it really is hard to make the decision to stop continuing trying. And I had huge respect for you realizing that you had had enough and that your body had been through enough. However, how amazing that what then transpired over the next few months or so led you to Randall. And we do know where that ends up. And we're going to talk about a bit more about that now. And it's just wonderful. So tell me about the first time you guys met, or a bit more about the matching. What does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, there's two sides really, aren't there? Because there's our side.
Absolutely. Yeah, you start, Emily, and then we're coming over to you, Randall, for sure.
There's you know, we were at that point intended parents, as we're called, and it's essentially, it's not a dating profile. It's not really like that, but you have to fill in a profile and add personality to it, obviously, like who you are, and then you get sent profiles of surrogates who may be appropriate for you. That's done via an agency, which is nice because it's just a conduit for the communication, I think. And Randall knows this, we've spoken about this already, but we were probably sent about 5 or 6 profiles of people, women, obviously, and just for one reason or another, they weren't quite right. And I think that's tough because you don't really know the system at that time. You're a bit like, what if no one else says yes? But again, I honestly feel like from that moment that I said I cannot do IVF myself, and if it means we live child-free, that's what it means, everything just fell into place. The Canadian situation fell into place, like finding the agency, then how Randall turning up in our inbox and just looking at her profile and going, oh my goodness, like this woman looks amazing. And she had this, she was a really cute picture of her and her family, and all the girls were wearing the same clothes, weren't they? They were all like in these little blue and white dresses. It just was instinctive. And of course you go on to read all the stuff about that person, but it was like, she just looks awesome. And that's it. That's the easiest way to make a decision. That's my side of it.
Well, one more thing, because didn't you, am I right in thinking that you ended up meeting in Amsterdam?
Yeah.
And that was kind of pretty coincidental that Randall was over this neck of the woods at the right time for you to be able to get there. So tell us a bit about that.
Yeah. So actually, Randall, you say it was your holiday that we gate crashed.
So go on then. So Randall, you tell us how you came to be a surrogate and how you came across Emily. Do you decide that you like the look of the intended parents, or are you put forward to everyone, or how does that work?
Me wanting to be a surrogate, like it kind of really was like a internet search, really, that I ended up connecting with the agency. So I had to do my own profile as well. Mine was much more vague than Emily and Dom's. Mine was kind of like a telephone interview that I did, and they kind of filled in the blanks for me. So then I feel because there's such a shortage of surrogates available, like I started getting sent tons of profile families, and everyone's story is so heartfelt. Like everybody wants to be a parent. And so you read them and you want to be able to help everybody, really. But then when I got Emily and Dom's profile, I've told Emily this, like her being a psychologist and just reading how, like her whole story and her journey where she was, I just felt like she would be someone who is super understanding and would understand my feelings about being a surrogate and would be a really good support for me. That's how I ended up being matched with them. And it kind of worked out well because we started talking, I believe, in January. And that March, I was already planning a trip over to Europe. And so they're like, can we come see you? And I was definitely on board to meet them. I was so nervous. But Emily made the comment that it's not like a dating profile. And it's not a dating profile, but it really does have those elements where it's like you do have that feeling that you want to impress each other and you want to have a really good connection and you're nervous about everything, but you're so excited at the same time. Yeah, it was really wonderful.
Can you tell us, Randall, so this is the first time that you've been a surrogate. What drew you to it? Because you do have daughters yourself already, don't you?
Yeah. Like my family was complete. Like I even had my tubes tied and everything. I enjoyed being pregnant so much. And with my last daughter, I had a home birth and I actually had a lot of people in the room. And it was just such an empowering situation just to take such a normal process and make it normal for a lot of different men that I had in the room instead of being like something taboo or sexual. And so I think that experience of having that home birth really made me feel like being able to give birth was like such an amazing gift. And then I just think that one thing I have always known my whole entire life, since probably I was very little, was that I wanted to be a mom. And if anyone had ever told me that I couldn't be a mom, like, I don't know, I would have done everything in my power to get there. And so just knowing like how deep of a desire that was for me, I just knew that since I enjoyed being pregnant, I could do that for someone else.
Wow. That is such an incredible gift. It really is. It's just so special. So you guys have met, kind of dating, but not dating. And what happens next? Like, do you let the agency know that it's a go? Talk us through the next steps.
Yeah, we had a weird thing, didn't we? Because we'd started talking a lot. Like, we were pretty much, great, that's it, we're on, like,
besties.
And also with Dom as well, so we've still got the group between the three of us, which is lovely, but I don't think we'd actually officially signed anything at that point. And so the two agencies, the British one and the Canadian one, set this like chat up so that we could formally, officially say, yes, I'd love you to be my surrogate. I'd really like to be your surrogate type thing. But we'd already been chatting for ages on WhatsApp and stuff. And we were like, we don't really need this. The official people anymore. We're fine. Like, we're done. I mean, yeah. So you had to still say, yes, we'd love Randall to be our surrogate. And Randall, I think you had to do something similar.
I just even think the first time we started, like, had that first FaceTime conversation, though, I was so nervous. Oh, do you remember? Like, I mean, they, like, kind of connected us. And I just wanted you to like me so much. Oh, it was most, like, it was so, I was so nervous. It was awesome, though, because you and Dom are wonderful people. Like, I couldn't have picked the best couple. You guys are the best couple I could have done this for.
I mean, like, oh.
Hear, hear. Honestly, you're very special. You really are.
Oh, well, that's going right back to you, Randall. Like, the rest of the story will say this as well. Like, oh my goodness.
So tell us. So you've said yes officially this time. Mm-hmm. And what does that mean? So in Canada, my understanding is you can only do it altruistically. But is that correct?
It isn't. Is like, you get reimbursed for expenses. So there is, like, definitely some money that does get exchanged. So I don't want to ever, like, want people to think that there was nothing. Like, there was definitely reimbursement fees, mm-hmm. for sure. And it's still a very, very expensive process for Emily and Dom to have to go through all of this. It is illegal to pay a woman to be a surrogate in Canada.
And can I ask, Emily, if you're happy to share, like, what kind of cost? And I know that the costs ended up spiraling because of COVID and things that we will talk about in a minute. But what kind of costs, like, were you given a bit of a ballpark at the beginning? This is probably going to cost approximately.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you are. And you don't go into this without knowing that, because that's the like I said about the US, one of the things you know, you do is say, well, okay, the situation there might be very legally defined, like it's very contractual based, but you pay for that as well. And the US, I think, is in the region of, and we were quoted probably 4 years ago now, was like £150,000. And if you have twins, it's automatically twice, because you have to have insurance.
And you don't necessarily have any control over that, of course.
No.
Gosh. And I'll say now, so I recorded an episode, I want to say it was in series one, with Jen Hepton, and we talked about her surrogate journey. And Jen is a Canadian who lives in the States.
Yes.
And she told us, so I'm just saying this as information for anyone listening who's thinking about the States, that depending on what state you're in, that there are differences in the law. So definitely, you know, if you're looking into it, undoubtedly you're going to find that out, but just do go back and have a listen to that episode just to get some information around that as well. But sorry, carry on then, Emily.
No, I think it's really good, because I think also when we, our experience is like, well, I was told this, so that's like the fact, isn't it? But absolutely there'll be different amounts and different, even now the law will have changed in some of those countries. So yeah, for Canada, I think we were given a ballpark of around £50,000 to £80,000. And the ballpark is because of just so many factors. Like, that money is made up of so many different things, like whether you have embryos already, whether you are you have a known surrogate, so you don't need an agency to match you, whether you have a certain type of insurance, whether you know, next kind of thing. So I don't know the full amounts, but I can tell you that because of COVID, it's sort of added on about £20,000 to £30,000.
And you've been through four rounds of IVF prior to this. Were they private? Were they?
Oh, yeah. No, one was NHS, but the other three were private. Although I disputed that with the NHS and they never backed down, because I should have been granted apparently three, but maybe two. And I was only granted one because of my cancer treatment. But anyway, that's part of that. So, yeah, you know, over the years, it's been various amounts of money. Anyone who's been through fertility issues and has done any treatment would know what you say around that, which is it's almost like a sunk cost, isn't it? I don't know whether many of us would have changed what we did. We just would have all wished it would have been easier in some way or another. And sure, cheaper, but funnily enough, money doesn't come into it that much, does it? One thing I will say, like just 100%, I'm really privileged. I'm privileged to be able to do any of that IVF, and I'm definitely privileged to be able to do surrogacy. And whilst there might be some people who think, oh my God, poor thing, she had to go and do surrogacy to have baby. I'm like, yeah, one sense, yes, but I'm so privileged. And that doesn't pass me by. With the money that we have is from savings and from working really hard. And the outcome is the outcome that we have. So I would never take that back at all.
I hear you. I really do. But as we were talking about earlier on about you deciding that enough was enough for your body, some people have to draw that line because of financial reasons and because they don't have that money in the bank. Or like me, like our last round, we went to my dad for it. And certainly Bob's mum has given us money here and there where we've taken time out for working. So I'm kind of singing from the same song sheet as you are with regards to kind of being lucky and privileged to have been able to pay for it. But yeah, that is, it is a huge, and it's horrible both ways that it comes down to money sometimes, but it's a very real issue when it comes to fertility treatment, especially in the UK, where there's a postcode lottery as far as the treatment's concerned. And that's terrible to hear that in theory, the NHS should have been covering your treatment because of your cancer, and that that isn't something that that happened. And yeah, I'm sorry to hear that. Although, like you say, kind of where we are is a really good place, so we're not going to focus on that. Randall, tell us from your perspective, does Emily then come to Canada to, you know, create some embryos? How does that all work?
Well, I don't actually know much about their embryo process because that was done with a donor, so they had their own little experience with that, where not only did they get to read profiles on a surrogate, they also had to read a profiles on an egg donor. And that part though did work out really well, because I was at a point where I didn't want to just meet Emily and Dom, get pregnant the next month for them. I wanted to build a relationship, so them not having those embryos gave us that opportunity to build our relationship, because they didn't get them, I think, until the summertime. And then we didn't actually transfer until November of 2019. So I think Emily is going to have to really talk more about the embryo process, because that was like a third person involved in all this.
But what's really interesting from what you say there, like there's so much from your point of view to being a surrogate. This isn't just, there's no just clearly, but this isn't you thinking, I'm going to do something wonderful for someone. Like you are completely invested in this and you want that relationship. You want that bond. You want that. So you, I don't know whether it's you are getting so much from it, which I'm sure that you are, but it's almost like this is imperative that this happens in order for this to go ahead. So it's not just a kind of snap, right, I'm going to do this. Like this means so much to you.
Oh, so much. I think that being able, like one of the biggest things was I never ever viewed this baby, like Baby Hope, as my baby. And knowing that it was always Emily and Dom's baby, I just think it gave this like added role where it was like I was the protector, or like, I don't even know like the proper word. Like I was just someone that was going to take care of their baby until she got here. And I didn't want to just do that for anybody. And I felt like even when I joined the agency, it was very much a like push to get pregnant right away. And that was not what I was looking for. So I just think really recognizing what I wanted out of this and being able to say, no, that's not what I want. I want to be able to build a relationship. I want to be able to know who I'm carrying a baby for, like, was really important to me.
No, I think that's really, really important to hear, actually. When we talked to Em and Sophie in series two about their surrogacy, so they were best friends. Em had Sophie's baby, which is just amazing, but they were doing it because of their friendship. But actually, you guys are kind of doing it because of your friendship as well, which is just really, really amazing. And not necessarily, I guess, what I expected per se, in the nicest possible way. Do you know what I mean?
I don't know how conscious I was. I'd probably have to think back about that. I just don't think I could ever have done it if I didn't feel a connection to Randall. And I think that's who I know I am as well. I love women, and I love connecting with women as well. And I think just the way Randall was like, I do, you're so badass as well, Randall. Like you've done an amazing job in all sorts of ways. But what's really special about Randall is that she can connect with so many people. She's an ER, a nurse, for goodness sake, but she connected really well with both Dom and I together, but also separately. And actually that was another really important thing. Like Dom and her have banter and don't have to be part of that. And that it's like, it's a really, I think, an equal relationship and there was connection on all sides. And then, yeah, when Randall said about, wanting to, I remember you'd said something like, oh, you said two things when we first definitely said that you're going to do it. You said, I've just got to tell you something. Do you remember this? You were like, please, can I still drink coffee? And also, I'm really sorry, but I've got to go to Disneyland with my kids. Is that okay? I was like, oh my God, do what you like.
Well, I think because I was on so many surrogacy groups and I would hear people like comments be made about like, because it is like my body and I'm carrying baby. And then they would always, I don't want to say put themselves first because people are allowed their own like what they want to do. But when people would be like, no, they're not going to come into the delivery room, or I always just wanted to make the process be as much your pregnancy as it was mine. Like, I didn't ever want it to be like I was taking over. I didn't ever want to make the pregnancy about me. I wanted to always make sure that you and Dom felt so included in it and try and like make sure your any decisions I was making you guys were okay with and comfortable with. And so even asking if I can have coffee, it was just a way of me being like, that's something I really want. But if you said no, I would have respected that 100% too, though, because to me it's not my baby to make those choices for.
And I was just, this woman has made three amazing babies. She works in an amazing job. Like she can do what she likes. Like
Yeah, we're good. We're good. So, Emily, going back to, and I'm just conscious of time and we've got a lot of ground to cover. Going back to the donor situation or the embryo situation, should I say, can you talk to us a little bit about that and
Yes.
actually, kind of embryo transfer and getting pregnant?
In the process of all my IVFs, my eggs were deteriorating, and we just discovered, obviously, by this point I was 39. I'd also been through chemo. I'm actually now going through perimenopause. Like, I'm not in good health in a fertility sense. I also very much suspect that, well, it's been suspected that I had the cancer as a result of a genetic malfunction. So the idea of donor eggs was not new. I had already thought, what if we had a pregnancy with me with donor eggs? And that's the one that I'd said, I can't do this, I can't be pregnant. And so having donor eggs with a surrogate was a very natural step. I know for some people that is a lot. And I feel like I naturally took a good few years to kind of come to absolute terms with that and very much feel at ease and actually incredibly happy with that situation. So we knew we'd always have to get the embryos created. We popped over to Canada in October 2018. Dom was on a work trip in New York. We decided to go to Toronto afterwards. He did his business. They stored it just in case, because we decided at this point, just in case. And then about 3 months later, we were looking at donor profiles. We found our donor probably about a month after that. And not dissimilar to Randall, although different, but not dissimilar, it was an instinctive decision about who this person was, how they made me feel. I took a bit more control over that, I think, because it was like, I'm not having my egg, so I'd like to be able to sort of see the essence of this person. We signed them up, although they're anonymous. She is anonymous. But she went and had her treatment, got an amazing amount of eggs, made amazing embryos, all tested for one wasn't great quality, seven were. And then they were put on ice. At this point, we'd met Randall. So she sort of, we were, there's sort of two lines of the thing going at the same time. And then when it got to September 2019, last year, Randall was ready for treatment. The embryos were frozen. And so that was all kind of keyed up in terms of IVF. And then you had treatment, didn't you, on the transfer? Was it the day before my 40th birthday? It was like,
I think it was November 7th.
it was the day before. Yeah. I was drinking champagne with some friends in a Welsh cottage. And I was like,
Yeah.
ah! And you sent us pictures of you with like your surgical hat on with your mom. I think she went with you.
Yeah, my mom came. Yeah. And you sent me one with your hair back in foil. Yeah.
And you've taken all these pictures and it was just like, oh my goodness, this is happening. This is actually happening. And on that note, I guess, you know, something people might ask is, did you not want to go out there for that bit? I had just always known I wasn't too worried about going out for everything. I didn't actually feel the need to be there constantly, which is why actually Canada felt absolutely fine. The fact that Randall and I had this connection, hopefully it's present. You know, it didn't worry me that we weren't there holding her hand at everything. She'd made it quite clear she was really competent and able to do lots of the stuff that we didn't have to be there for. So it all just felt easy.
Amazing, amazing. And then your 2 week wait happens, which we all know what that's like. Interestingly, my 2 week wait was over my 40th birthday as well, wasn't it? So gosh. And then you get the call. Are you there for the test? Are you like not necessarily in the country, I think we know from what you've just said, but
no, what happened was, this is quite funny, I only found this out a few months ago.
Actually, wait, it was awful for me too though. There was like, I know, but like I, because it's a lot of pressure because I did not want to disappoint you guys at all. So I kind of, we had talked and they had asked me not to test until the 2 week wait, because you have had that experience and I wanted to be super respectful of that. So I felt like I would secretly test and not say anything. So that's what I did. And it wasn't meant to be hurtful in any way or not care about your feelings, but it was just knowing like we were going to show the results over FaceTime. And I just needed to be prepared myself if it was negative, mostly if it was negative, like how I was going to react, because I would have been so devastated. Like I feel like it would affect me so much not being able to. And so being able to see like a day or two before that was positive, I knew when we were going to do that FaceTime call, like I just knew like, right on, let's do this. Like that was going to be so much more exciting for me. And I was way more prepared and in a better headspace.
I love that, because we were talking about it, weren't we? If was it actually after even Hope was born? And we had an evening in the house where we were
I kind of tested before.
Confession.
I was like, I wondered if you had, but it just, you know what? It felt so good. It felt like there was, like I said, this whole thing had been for me letting go and just being at ease with not worrying about my body anymore. It was simply that. And the fact that I'd, in essence, like proxied that to somebody else and this person was doing this for me. And I say, of course, it's for Dom too, but literally for me in the sense of I couldn't have the baby. It felt really like I loved it. I loved what you'd done, because I was like, of course she did that, because she did that for us. Like, it was really funny. But yeah, no, so we had the call. You were on a hockey weekend.
Yeah, I was away at a hotel and
And obviously time difference, I think.
So I think it was like 6 a.m. or something at my time that we were like chatting together.
And then you showed me on the screen like, and I just, Dom told me off because I was like, shit.
Yeah, before. I remember that too. Yeah. It was awesome though.
And the girls were there running about, weren't they, behind us?
Oh gosh. And so then you were surely there through some of the pregnancy, Emily. I know that you said you didn't feel like you needed to be there, and that's an amazing kind of, like you say, being able to hand that over and know that your little one at this point is safe with Randall. But were you there? Talk us through, like, did you go to some of the scans or what was your back and forth like? And then, like, we end up talking, we'll head straight headlong into COVID as well, but handing over, go on.
Yeah, well, there was no back and forth other than I'd always felt like I wanted to be there for the 20-week scan. 12-week scans have got a big trigger for me. And I'd said that to Randall and I'd said, we're going to be there virtually, but if you're okay with it, I think my anxiety will just be too much. So when we got past that stage, 20-week scan was really exciting. So we went out to Canada, and Randall is basically near Toronto. So it's not so bad. Like, the time difference is 5 hours. The flight is 6-7 hours. It's not LA or, you know, it's anywhere that's really far. So we went out for a long weekend, like Thursday to Tuesday, I think it was. We hung out with you and your family, didn't we? We went for lunch and some dinner, went for walks, met the kids. And then I think it was on the Monday before we left that you had the scan. And even then, thinking back about it now, that was the 30th of February, 28th, sorry, because it was the leap day. There was some COVID stuff going on, wasn't there? There was like masks and we weren't allowed
Not
in.
able to come in.
Yeah, we weren't allowed in.
So you'd flown all that way, but then couldn't actually go into the scan.
I think we knew that though before you came over, and then we were like in our heads, like, let's use the surrogacy card to get you in. You guys were allowed to come in for the end of the scan, and
Yes.
you got to find out what you were having.
Oh my. Well, do you know what? As you were doing, I'm sure we've said this since, but as you were in the scan, so Randall, we all went together, the three of us went together. Randall got taken in, and I remember you also said like a little sob story for us, didn't you? You were like, they've come all the way from
And I was like, they're the parents. Like, I'm not this isn't my baby. These are the parents. The parents should be able to come in the room.
England. I know. She wasn't having any of it, was she?
I think it's not as common in this area though. Real like you don't hear about surrogates as often either. So it's such a unique situation. But you were allowed in.
Well,
Well, I
yeah.
was convinced you were having a boy.
But when you were doing it in the scan, Dom and I actually said to each other, I actually think this feels like the best situation. Now, because of the triggers that had happened in the past with scans, I actually had always slightly wanted not to leave you with the responsibility of the scan, but to somebody to say, everything looks fine, now come and look. And actually, that's what happened. So, either as a result of COVID or the clinic's incredibly strict. Not knowing what to do with surrogate pregnancies. Randall went in, had all the checks. The woman, the radiographer, came back out and picked us up and said, now you can come in. Everything looks fine, by the way. And it was just like, okay. So that was just a wave of excitement and relief. And then we walked in and we had already been told we weren't going to be told the gender and we wanted to know.
Hey, yeah.
Yeah. And then she went, do you want to know the sex of the baby? And we were like, what? You can tell us? She said, yeah, sometimes I wouldn't, but you can very much tell what this baby is. And then she showed us, it was like, you're having a girl. So yeah, that was the 20-week scan, flew home, all excited. And a week later, COVID hit.
And so where does that leave you? Because obviously we went into lockdown, maybe not immediately after that, but a series of different countries went into lockdown. We were wondering if that was going to happen. Randall, you must tell us what Canada was like. Kind of March, April, May. Did you go into lockdown at any point? How did that work? Certainly, did the borders close for a while?
Yeah, they did. I don't know at what point, like, I know that you, Emily, and Tom were like very anxious about getting over here as soon as possible. And I don't know, truthfully, if I realized how significant that was. And then I believe shortly after you got over, things got more tight with the borders and things like that from England, even. And so I was so grateful and thankful they were here because if they wouldn't have been here for the birth of the baby, like birth of hope, like I don't even know, like that would have ruined my whole experience. Like that was not ever what I wanted. Like I couldn't even imagine. And then at one point, only Emily might have, like maybe was coming over. And then when they both decided to come over, like, oh, I was just so thankful they were here and that they were able to do that. And because they both worked from home and it actually couldn't have worked out better. And it actually was so great for us too, because then we could visit with each other and build a better relationship.
And what was that like for you, Emily? Because I remember the messages back and forth, like, do I, don't I? What does this look like? And then again, this relief when you kind of made the decision. But talk to us about that process.
Yeah, I mean, there was not relief to start with. I was pissed off and I was just. Actually, honestly, I was distraught for about 2 days. I couldn't stop crying. I granted, selfishly, I know COVID was, it was just like, no. 10 years of trying for a baby, and this is now happening. Just, I couldn't get my head around any of it. And actually, what happened was I really had, I guess, a bit of a breakdown, and I don't even mean that. I just wasn't functioning. I was crying and I was upset. Dom amazingly just took over. He took over admin, and that's just what we needed at that point. We needed somebody to make sensible phone calls and come up with some measured ideas, and I was just a dribbling mess. But as a result of that, I got it all out, and I also remember where I was when I had this thought. I was in my front room and I think I was talking to my mum, or I'd put the phone down for my mum and my brother, and I just went, hold on, if we can make this work and we actually have to go to Canada now, which, by the way, that's not terrible, I know, but like in the grand scheme of everything, it was just like, what? This wasn't in the plan. I was like, this could work really well. This could be an amazing opportunity to be near Randall, to see her family, to watch the baby grow. And it all just, after 2 days of crying, it just went, oh, hang on, I think I really want this. And at the same time, we found out from our lawyers what was possible, you know, how we might be able to get flights, what we might be able to do about our work. The animals managed to be, we found out they could be looked after by amazing people. Again, it all just fell into place. And then we left probably a week later, 18th of April.
When was hope due?
Not till July, like end of July.
Months before, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, at this point, I was on forums and things of surrogacy, COVID surrogacy, international surrogacy stuff. And a lot of people seemed, in these groups, seemed to be from Australia going to Canada, or lots of Ukraine stories as well. And it was just all, we can't get out, we can't book flights, our flight's been cancelled, no insurance, it just kept going. And our lawyers just definitively said, if you have an opportunity to get out there now and find a way to make it work, and you can work and you can earn money, do it. And I thank God we did it, because of all the reasons that then turned up, you know, we got to spend time with Randall and her family, who we had met, but, you know, we weren't going to see you that much, were we? And it ended up, we kind of bubbled together, where Canada sort of had bubbles, but it was so chilled out. The other thing about COVID is that the main lockdown in the UK, we missed. And I'm so grateful for that, because I just know from when we were leaving, it was incredibly stressful. And to not worry about that anymore. And Canada had their version of lockdown, but everyone was so, not chilled out and they weren't doing it, but it just, there were so few cases, weren't there? It wasn't like the UK. Your government seemed to know what to be able to say and do pretty well. Your town is just the most beautiful community of people who we've now made good friends with. You welcomed us, Randall, without any hesitation. And I've thought a lot about that. And I know we've spoken about it in the sense of, you could have easily just said, yeah, come, but like, don't be on my doorstep. Like, I didn't expect you to be, you know, around every day. And you were just so welcoming. You brought us food when we were in quarantine. We hung out with the kids. It just changed the whole surrogacy experience into something amazing, something really unique and special and amazing.
Wow. It's like, I don't know, does this sound really silly, but it kind of is a bit of a love story, isn't it? You know, in its own right. It's wonderful. It's lovely hearing it. And so, Randall, Emily and Dom turn up, not quite, but practically on your doorstep, relatively speaking. Let's talk about, you know, from that point of view. Yeah. And you've still got, where are we? So April, May, June, July. So 2 months left of the pregnancy. How, you know, Emily's told us from her point of view, but for you, does Emily now come to appointments? Is that still the case? And in the lead up to the birth, how are you feeling with everyone kind of there?
Well, because of COVID, things were so much different. Like appointments that I should have gone to were canceled. They were only doing like necessary appointments. So all those appointments, Emily joined. And then at one point you said that you would like Dom to join, but then I think you both were able to come to that appointment. So any appointments that I did have, they were definitely there with me, which was awesome. But it was just like, even that, we had midwives, so that experience was a lot different because of COVID as well. I also had a lot of stuff going on in my own life, so I feel like that 2.5 months like really flew by fast for me, because it was like I had so many, my brain was kind of in a lot of different compartments. So it was, I don't know, I loved having them there. Like it helped relieve some of my stresses because of everything that was going on with me.
Yeah, I can understand that. And you had to stop work, is that right? Because you were working in an ER, or as we call it here, an A&E department. Yeah. And because of COVID, you had to stop working, is that right?
Yeah, like Emily and Dom, they were really, really concerned about me working in that department. And so it was being respectful to them and their baby that I also made that choice to work with them, so I didn't have to work.
And then heading towards due date. What does the birth look like? Talk to us.
So I had lots of complications. I ended up developing a blood clot in my left femoral vein, and that put me on bed rest for a good 2 weeks straight. And then we ended up, well, I also wanted to have hope early because of the pain that I was in. So we ended up having like a scheduled induction, but then that also turned into more kind of complications as well. So everything that went wrong in the pregnancy, Hope was healthy the whole time. So that was fantastic. Anything that was going wrong for me, everything was completely successful in the end. So there was no like issues that way. Even with COVID, like I didn't think Emily and Dom and my mom would all be able to be there for the birth, and that worked out. And I am so thankful that worked out, because that's what I would have wanted more than anything, was to have everyone there. And I got that. So I'm so thankful for that. Hope was born. She was healthy. And oh.
Tell us, Emily, from your point of view, what did the birth kind of feel look like to you?
Oh my goodness. Because we've got a video of it on like iPhone, and I've seen it obviously a few times since. And I'm just like, oh, it's so out of body. I'm sure everybody says that, whatever perspective they're having on the birth. And it's obviously so strange to now see her. Oh no, every parent does this. Like, you came out of a body. Yeah, I mean, Randall said it as well. We'd never been like 100% set on it, but we'd always said maybe we'll have a home birth because Randall's done it and she's so chill about the whole thing. And if it was me, I couldn't and I wouldn't, but she could. And so when the clock came along, it just very quickly sort of escalated into something slightly different. So I think for all of us, it was this unpicking of what it was. And Randall's right. Actually, Hope was never at risk, was she? It was your, like, we talked quite seriously about your life, and that was huge, just making sure that you were okay and making sure that this situation was going to be safe and happy for everybody. But as it turns out, we went from kind of home birth over to a hospital with quite a few different consultants, but I don't know if we were ever quite sure who was was the main care. But actually, that hospital was London in Ontario, which is hilarious because that's on Hope's birth certificate. They had a brilliant surrogacy policy because they were quite big. They'd already done a lot of surrogacy pregnancies. They already had policies about intended parents and the couple coming in. And even given COVID, like Randall said, her mum and us too, and Randall were all allowed in the room way before she was ready to give birth. So that was just lovely. It felt like there was this team of us together. And, you know, Randall, can I say this, Randall? Because Randall gives birth so perfectly, as she was told by so many doctors.
I know. If I heard that one more time in that situation, oh.
All the doctors were like, you don't need any pain relief. You don't need anything like, you know, big or anything. You give birth so perfectly. It was like, no, but please help her. She's not. Actually, I mean, in the end, you gave birth so incredibly quickly, and I mean, it was an hour and a half, wasn't it, from waters breaking to Hope coming out. And I have never watched a birth on video. I've never seen one, and probably even if I decided I wanted to, I wouldn't have done in the last 10 years. So it was incredibly new experience for me. I mean, apart from seeing like films and things. So to have this unbelievably perfect baby just turn up and just these limbs and crying straight away and just perfect was like unbelievable. And, you know, as a woman as well, to not give birth but to be there to actually take the baby and hold her, and yeah, it just was so powerful. And actually, Randall and I hadn't really talked about this that much. I suppose I kind of ended up being your birth partner, didn't I? And even with COVID and even with them saying, but we have to take you to the operating room, and you giving birth much sooner than they could take you, you know, I clambered on the bed with her because me and her had decided that's what we were going to do. It didn't matter what the doctors said. We were like, we're doing it.
Emily.
I just ended up being next to you and the baby on me, and talk about connection. It was really powerful, really powerful. And yeah, that bit's really spiritual, I think. It felt so, there was nothing about it that didn't feel like it wasn't my birth, without wishing to say like, oh yeah, I gave birth, because I clearly didn't. It was just really special.
Did you have skin to skin right from the beginning? Is that part of it, do you think?
Yeah, I did. What I guess was kind of interesting about this bit was we were then two teams, weren't we, suddenly? So Dom and I were with Hope and they were doing the baby checks, and then Randall was in her very sort of, I guess, not quick recovery, but the medical team were looking after Randall because the birth had been really, I guess, stressful on your body, hadn't it? So whilst we were sort of separate, we were in the same room, but I know that obviously you were taken off to have some, I was going to say work done. That's completely wrong. You had some surgery. But what was really special is we then all, so Randall and her mum and me and Dom and Hope, went to the mother and baby unit, and we had rooms next to each other, and we all stayed there for a couple of days. So it felt lovely. Like, there's a video, isn't there, where I'm bringing her to you, and you're sort of still all like knackered. I'm just like, look at the baby.
Gosh, and what did that feel like for you, Randall? And what has the recovery been like? Because I guess one thing about going into having a baby and the birth specific, well, all of it, I guess, but in this instance, talking about the birth, is that we have no idea really what that looks like. If we have a planned cesarean or abdominal birth, then there is a certain element of control and understanding of, what that's going to look like and how it's going to go. But when you go in, whether for an induction or because your waters break, and really there's a myriad of different ways that it could go. So this went, as Emily said, it had started to escalate in the last few weeks of your pregnancy. And then it sounds like the actual birth was fairly traumatic, particularly for you and your body. So how were you feeling afterwards, and what's the recovery been like?
I think I was so scared to give birth. Like, I wanted Hope to be, I would have preferred a C-section, truthfully, and been able just to go that route because I was so scared because of the blood clot and the risk of having a PE, also being on the blood thinners, and then the complications I had after I hemorrhaged and had to go to the OR. I think I'm pretty good at accepting things because I really did want a home birth. That was like my main goal. And then the minute, Hope safety was always number one. So the minute that was not an option anymore, having to go to the hospital. But it was always like getting over like the loss of not being able to have a home birth. So then I'm going to the hospital. And then I wanted that plan to look a certain way. It did and it didn't look a certain way. Like, I didn't really get to see Hope after I gave birth to her. Because I wasn't doing well and I had to go to the OR. But then at that point, I was pretty self-absorbed and just wanted myself to be like taken care of. So I think the next morning, waking up and having Emily and Dom bring Hope to me to meet her then was perfect because I'm happy that I was in a position where I was like more comfortable, more awake, more stable than just giving birth and thinking like I needed to see her in that moment when I didn't need to see her in that moment. It was really just nice to see her the next day. My recovery wasn't horrible. Like, I did have a couple complications like 4 weeks after giving birth because of everything that happened. I had to go back in the hospital for a couple of days, but it was nothing where I was ever in pain. Like, if you would have looked at me, you would have been like, oh, she's fine. It was just more things you don't see that were going on in my body. Since that experience in August, like, I've just always just been getting better and better and better. And I feel like my body's like pretty much well, like recovered. And I feel like being able to have such a good connection with Emily and Dom and seeing photos of Hope, like the transition has never, ever once been an issue ever. Like, watching Emily and Dom be with Hope is like amazing. And I'm just so grateful that I could see that and see her grow and see them with her. And yeah.
And I'm going to ask you now, would you do it again? Was this a one-time offer from the beginning?
Not necessarily. Like, I'm not gonna be. I never wanted to be a surrogate that was gonna be a multiple surrogate ever. I always would say that I was like consider doing like a second journey, like for Emily and Dom. Like, I thought that, but after this last birth, they told me that I can't have any more babies. Like, it's too high. It was way too high of a risk of a situation. So, this was my one and only journey, and I'm so thankful that I got to do that.
Absolutely. It's amazing. It really is. And I'm really pleased to hear that, yeah, your recovery has been full and well. And Emily, you ended up staying in Canada for, was it week? Well, it's definitely weeks. Was it months afterwards?
Can I just say something about what Randall said? And
Please.
this is just testament to who she is. She's played that down about how, how much she's had to endure as a result of this. And I think that's probably what's interesting about surrogacy is you have to be so prepared to have good, sometimes really difficult conversations. And I know we spoke about, you know, there were points where I was like, is Randall's life going to be okay? And that was huge. That was absolutely huge, having, you know, gotten so close and also so close to her daughters and her mum. And yeah, it was big. And I think what was lovely is we were always on the same page. So when Randall has said she'd like to have a C-section, I just clarified it wasn't us that said you can't have one. it was so frustrating because the hospital were like, no, it's too dangerous because XYZ, because of, you know, your health. So what was amazing is I think the situations that are difficult really show you what relationship you have. And all we wanted, I think it might sound sort of trite to say, of course we wanted a healthy baby, but not just at this point, but there was no way we were going to risk anything to do with Randall. And I hope we would have said the same thing, but, you know, having gotten so close and grown so strong as a relationship since we had been out there as well, it just became even more clear. So yeah, that was part of it. And there was another part actually that I was going to say, it sort of leads on to your question, I think, Kat, which is then being in Canada afterwards, and even from that moment that we brought Hope over to Randall's room in recovery, I actually felt like I've got a ready-made mum who can tell me all the things that I need to know about being a parent. I was like, great, now I can ask, what do I do when? And, you know, you've been so gracious since. And I'm glad I didn't feel too proud to say, I don't know what to do on this or that. I think there was one conversation I had where I said something like, oh, so I'd just give a paracetamol, wouldn't I? And you were like, no, you don't give babies paracetamol. I was like, oh, yeah, no, I didn't really mean that.
Because it's hard. You get given a baby and you don't know what to do necessarily. It's just, it's bloody hard. And so often when you, especially when you've gone through a fertility journey, I think, and whether that be treatment or baby loss, or it's, you're kind of nervous about looking into it as well, aren't you? Like I say this, if someone gave me a pound for every time I say this, but it's so true. You look down at your bump and you don't necessarily look forward and look ahead to the baby being here and what the ultimate goal of this is. It's not, again, I don't want to say just, but it's not just the pregnancy. The pregnancy is a means to an end that is a lifetime of parenthood. And I'd like to say, with Ren being almost 17 months old, maybe you do start feeling more comfortable and looking ahead a bit more and planning. Although, to be honest, I don't necessarily find the time to do half of that. But I know initially, and I hear this from so many people, I was nervous about reading the baby books. I was nervous about looking into things too much because you just can't believe that they're actually going to be here. So having Randall there, like you say, that was amazing.
Oh, I just totally was. And also, like, we would go within, so we were staying probably 10 minutes away from her house. And I think within 3 days of us all being home, we went round. Actually, there was some legal stuff we had to do, wasn't there? But anyway, we went round with Hope. And your mum was just awesome. She's just the most beautiful person. And she'd be like, when my kids were doing this, I used to. And I think it was her way of going, maybe you want to try doing this. And it would just be the most lovely, okay, great, let's try that. Like, put her to sleep on this pillow because that suits her, you know. It just, in the absence of our family and friends, and ironically, in the presence of COVID, we wouldn't have had family and friends around. So actually, this was an unbelievable situation where we had experts who absolutely loved Hope already and who wanted to help us. And I just felt like, this is brilliant. I've got like my own ready-made NCT, you know, whilst we're here. And we stayed 5 weeks. We flew home after Hope was born. And I hadn't actually felt homesick at all. I'd really loved Canada. I'd loved working there. I'd loved being around Randall and her family. And as soon as we had Hope, I really had to check myself out about whether it was postnatal something. But it wasn't. It was like a, oh, I think I want to be home now. I really miss the animals. I really miss, you know, being around, especially my mum and dad. And so that felt like a really good point to come home. We had a beautiful 5 weeks of very quiet time, seeing some people in exactly the right proportions and amount, getting to know Hope, and then flying home.
Wow, gosh. And I just, like, there's so much I could touch on, but we are going to wrap this up in a minute. But you mentioned there about, you know, was this postnatal something? And one of the other conversations I've had for this series of the podcast is with a guy, Viren, about postnatal depression and anxiety in dads. But that does actually, you know, that is partners. And in your instance, because you know, it's not the, you know, you didn't physically have Hope, but still, you know, you can suffer. One can suffer from this very much so without it being the physical pregnancy. And so that's something that was very self-aware for you to think about. And for anyone else that's out there, whether it be a partner or someone who's having a baby via surrogate, that this is something that we need to watch out for sure. And do listen to that episode if that's, well, you know, almost to prepare yourself, because that was something for me. I was very conscious of the whole postnatal depression thing, because there are some links with fertility, births and postnatal depression. So the way that I dealt with that was by kind of almost arming myself and telling people around me that this happens, this might happen. And it didn't happen, which was great. But do go and listen to that episode as well. But very quickly, Emily, so you're home, Hope's home, meeting your family. Sum it up in a, give me a sentence.
What's going on? My body is going like this. Like, it's, I don't know if it's got a sentence to it. It's got a feeling. it's done like heart. The biggest thing that I felt is so content. So content. And that's going to make me cry. Because honestly, 10 years ago, when I remember when I had cancer, I couldn't look straight ahead, and there was so much going on. And I just remember saying, all I want to feel is peace. And it was so all consuming. And obviously over the years, I've felt peace. And so I haven't spent 10 years feeling that, you know, heightened, but I cannot explain the contentment, and I probably don't need to. I think this is parenthood, right? This is when you love your children. And I just, it's contentment. And that extends to my family seeing Hope, and particularly my mum and dad. I'm really close to my parents. They live 40 minutes away. And I always had this big feeling that they were really missing out as well. I've got nephews, but they're in another country. They're very close to them, but they just don't see them that much. And since we've been back, I've probably seen my parents twice or three times a week. And I would be the first person to tell you, oh, I don't see my parents that much. No, you clearly do. They are obsessed with Hope, especially my mum. She's just like, I need to know when I'm seeing her. I need to know. I mean, that's just contentment. And Dom, quick to add to your story, you know, he doesn't have parents. He lost both his parents. And so him having that, having Hope, having me healthy, having my parents close, I mean, what else can you do? And we've got our beautiful animals who are part of this story too. And yeah, I don't know. I just, the whole thing is really quite magical. And it hasn't been, that's not to gloss over it and make it sugarcoated. It's not, it's been so hard. But I think it's magical because it's been hard. And, you know, a lot of that comes down to Randall. A lot of that. She does know, I think, and I do. I hope I tell her this as much as I can. But I want to take the opportunity publicly to say, you know, this wouldn't have been possible without her. And especially not possible in the way that we did it. And in the way that we are now connected, I can't wait to see her. I really missed you this week, Randall. I don't think I told you that. I really missed you. And the girls are just, Randall's daughters are just these beautiful firecrackers who also sort of took Hope into their sisterhood. Yeah, I mean, there you go, contentment.
Wonderful. Thank you so much both for sharing your stories. It's just, it is incredible, and like a fairy tale, for want of a better you know, because clearly there was so much that went into it. But where we are now is a wonderful, wonderful place to be. And yeah, I really, really appreciate you talking to me. So thank you so much. And we'll see you soon. Okay. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Lots of love. Bye.